Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off by telling you why I am now out on Antonio Brown. Then Jenny and Connor come in to break down all the news from the combine and looking forward to free agency. As always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome back in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. The combine's in the books. We're about a week out from the start of free agency this week. Next week at this time, we'll be right in the middle of the legal tampering period, which means player movement's going to start. We're going to cover the combine. We're also going to talk about some of the guys that could be on the move over the next couple of weeks. But we're going to kick things off with what has been the biggest story, I think, of this offseason, what should continue to be the biggest story of this offseason, and we'll see where it goes. But I finally got to the point this week. I finally got to the point this week where I just decided if I was a team, I would not trade for Antonio Brown. I would not touch him. And I love the contract. 39 over 3. None of that money's guaranteed. I love the player. I love the competitor. I love all of I love so much about Antonio Brown. But there are a couple reasons why I wouldn't do it. Number one, if it didn't work there in that environment, where is it going to work? Like, how many teams can make it work? The Steelers have one of the more player-friendly structures in the league, okay? That's a place where you can be yourself. That's a place where they're not going to kill your personality. That's a place where if you're going to play outside the bounds that are set by most teams, that's okay. So if you're another team, why would you think, coming from Pittsburgh, that you could make it work where the Steelers couldn't? The Steelers gave him three contracts. So if you're another team, what makes you think that you'd be able to keep him part of the program, on board with the program, when the Steelers couldn't? With a coach who's been to two Super Bowls, with a locker room that's probably as strong as any locker room in the league, with a bunch of guys that he played with forever, and those offensive linemen, Ben, obviously, there are the issues that went sideways, Cam Hayward, Stephen Tuitt, there are a lot of guys that have been there for a long time. And they couldn't keep him on board in that environment. So that's number one. Number two, you don't need one. You just don't. And I'm going to go through the number one receiver for the last, let's say, 10 Super Bowl champions, okay? This year it was Edelman with the Patriots. Last year it was Alshon Jeffrey with the Eagles. The year before that, Edelman with the Patriots. The year before that, Demaryius Thomas with the Broncos. Again, Edelman with the Patriots before that. The Seahawks, Golden Tate, Doug Baldwin, whoever you want to take there. Ravens, Anquan Boldin. Giants, Victor Cruz. Packers, Greg Jennings. Saints, Marcus Colston. You get the picture. Like, there aren't superstars there. Like, they're like good players, but not superstars. So you don't need a great receiver. So, I mean, to me, it's, you know, you look at the way teams are structured. The two of the four teams in the Super Bowl this year, the Saints, or two of the four teams in the Final Four this year, the Saints and the Patriots, if you look at their history, between them, only one skill position player other than the quarterbacks has ever been paid more than $10 million a year. And that's Jimmy Graham, who was on the Saints for a year on that contract before they traded him. So that's number two. Number three, I don't know how you sell it to your locker room. I have a hard time seeing where, like, guys aren't going to be constantly looking over their shoulder based on what we're seeing this offseason. Do you have teammates walking around on eggshells around him because they don't know where he's coming from? And so I don't know. I just look at these things, guys, and we'll welcome in Connor and Jenny now, and I'm out. Like, I just, like, there was a point earlier this offseason where I would have done it if I was a certain team. I just, like, I don't think it's worth it. Like, he's a great player. He's a great, great player. Great competitor. Good contract. All of that. But I'm past the point where I think it's worth it to bring a player like that in.
I think there were a few things in the interviews he did recently, including the one with ESPN. He said, I just don't have to play anymore, or something along those lines. And I feel like for teams, the last thing they want to hear is, you know, commitment being questioned. But it's interesting just how, I think if he had just kind of sat there and explained that this is where things went bad with the Steelers. Like, I think there's a lot of people that would understand in some ways, right? Because, you know, it's not only Brown, it's Bell. It's more than one star player that, for whatever reason, didn't want to play there. I think there were some legitimate questions about, you know, is everyone on the team being treated the same? You know, thanks to Kevin Colbert's own words, right? So I do think he had a legitimate point to make. But I agree that the way that he made it and the way that it came out, whether it was frustration or whatever was coming through in that interview, is certain to shrink the trade market. And then this, you know, you're kind of in this no-win situation if you're the Steelers, right? You don't want to just give this great player away and you feel like you can't put him back in your locker room now. So you've got to give him away. And it's going to be, they're a smart organization. They don't like taking things below value.
Right. And you wonder, like, Connor, like, would he go full TO now? Or would he do it like Favre did in 2008 when he showed up? Remember, like, before they traded him to the Jets, he shows up at training camp in Green Bay. Because I don't think the Steelers are going to let themselves be pushed around here. And it feels a little bit like AB is trying to get cut. And maybe that's what's happening. Maybe he is trying to get cut. I just think the Steelers would almost hold on to him to keep to prove a point. And then does AB show up, like, to try to be a disruption, to try to create more? It's complicated in that way.
It is, yeah. I mean, I talked to a few people who can have a better understanding of the salary cap than I do, and the Steelers do have leverage if he doesn't, certainly have leverage if he doesn't plan to show up. It's just that roster bonus, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's forfeiture of salary. I mean, they can take all that money back. Of course, there'll be a grievance filed, and, you know, and then we'll really get into the weeds, you know, as we go on during that season. But, you know, I just think that as we distance ourselves further and further from, you know, the reason, what, you know, why it all broke up or where it got the way it was, I do think there's a little bit of revisionist history there. I think that Jenny's right. There were some cogent points that he had. Like, if he had just went on the shop, you know, with LeBron James and 2 Chainz and all those guys, that, you know, I was watching that the other day. And if he led with the fact that, like, yeah, Ben Roethlisberger's firing passes at his defensive lineman, and then he's going out and blaming me and saying I'm running the wrong routes, I think people would understand that. Yeah. You know, I think that for a lot of the league, there is a different Ben Roethlisberger than the one that the Steelers are trying to shove down our throats as this, you know, as the leader of their locker room.
No question.
You know, I think that people see a different guy, and I think that a lot of people would agree with Antonio Brown. Here's the reason why I'm in. I am in because, like you said, this is essentially 3 1-year deals, right?
Right.
You can get out of the deal at any point in time. I say you take him for 1 year and you see if there's a desire to prove them wrong, right? If there's still that, you know, I want to go, you know, crush everybody because I want the Steelers to feel like crap for treating me the way that they did. That's money. I mean, that's a great, you know, his average is 11 touchdowns and whatever it is, 1,300 yards a season. So, you know.
My issue with that, I got 2 issues with that. Number one, I think you're going to have to give up premium draft capital to get him. And if you do that, you empower him. You know, this isn't like players like this. Sometimes you want to buy low on them because then they'll have something to prove, right? Then they'll have something to like I'm going to show them. If you buy high on him, if you flip a first round pick for him, like, he knows that's going to have an effect, right? And number two, I just, now I forgot my point. So we're off to a flying start.
Well, do you think that, I mean, you know, at first the conventional wisdom was that this is going to be a mid-round, you know, a third-round pick. Now, I've seen it, you know, elevated as much as...
I just don't think the Steelers are going to give them away. I think the Steelers would rather prove a point here because there is the element of precedent here too, right? There is an element of precedent here where it's... If you do this, do you open it up for other players to do it in the future?
Totally.
You
know? And they didn't cave, different situations, obviously, but they didn't cave to Bell. They're not going to cave to Brown either, I don't think.
Right. I wouldn't think that they would. And I mean, my second point, which I now remember because I'm fresh off the train.
Great. Excellent.
My second point, I think if you're gonna make this trade, you're a win now team, right? Is that fair?
Totally.
Like, I think if you're not in a win now position, you're not interested because he's 31 years old and it's just like, why would you do that, right?
Or you're looking to legitimize something that you're putting together.
So here's the catch-22 of that. If you're in that position, is it worth jeopardizing a year? Like, if you're in a win now, so I think it's a catch-22 where it's like you have to be a win now team, but if you're a win now team, do you want to risk jeopardizing a year? Because look what he did to the Steelers season last year, and Ben's part of the problem. I think the whole idea that the whole thing was going to work with all the issues, and I'll admit that I was at the beginning of the year, I was like, Tomlin's as good at handling this as anyone else, and I said it. I'm like, this is who the Steelers are, and it finally blew up on them.
Finally blew up.
Finally blew up on them. I just think that if that's a risk, like if he's going out and saying, I don't need football.
And that's like, the comment that really stood out to me. Yep.
Yeah. Like I don't need football. And I think he said it to Jeff Darlington on ESPN. But if I'm the team, I'm like, so does that mean if he just doesn't like the situation, he's just going to be a pain in the ass or he's going to walk? It's just the whole thing. Like, and I think if we're going to play like armchair psychologists here, I think he's probably trying to get cut, right? Probably trying
Absolutely.
To get cut.
Yeah.
The issue he's going to have if he gets cut is like now who's going to be lining up? Because I think, I don't know. I mean, the Raiders are the one team that I know the Steelers have been very focused on. Like, is like, this is the potential suitor because they've run comps. They think they should get a one for him based on the contract, based on the player, because the Cowboys got a one or the Raiders got a one because they got a one or the Raiders got a one for Amari Cooper because Brandon Cooks went for a 1-2 off seasons in a row. So I don't, it's just complicated. And if I'm, I mean, look, I just don't think you need a great receiver to win. Like, it's just the way it is in the NFL. So anyway, we'll get back to the pod in a second. But first, hey, I can tell you firsthand, guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. I barely ever go to the doctor. I'm at the dentist maybe once every few years. It's terrible. I'm trying to get better at it. And I'll tell you guys, I'm going to try to give you guys some help here so you can get better at it too. Because all of this, it's also true of erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED do not get treated for it. So thankfully, Roman has created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. And I'm going to give you guys a special offer here. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/Breer. That's my last name, B-R-E-E-R. Fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy to do it, so take care of it. Again, for a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/Breer. That's GetRoman.com/Breer for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/Breer. All right, let's jump into the news. And because I don't have it up, Connor, why don't you lead us off with news item number one?
I will, but I'm glad that everyone is tamping down his trade value because Mr. Big Chest can come play for me, man. We'll see you guys in the playoffs. News item number one, 5 defensive linemen were tagged on Monday. Grady Jarrett, DeMarcus Lawrence, Frank Clark, Jadeveon Clowney, and D. Ford, leaving the market at the position completely picked apart. None of those 5 tagged players are close to long-term deals with the deadline set for July 15th to get one done. Good offseason to be Trey Flowers.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Or Za'Darius Smith Preston Smith.
Ziggy Ansah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's just – it's like you see the Lawrence situation in such a different spot than it was last year where he signed the tag on day one. I think it was like right when he got it, he signed it, right? And now that thing has a chance to get ugly. You know, Frank Clark, what do you do if you're the Seahawks there? I think that's 50-50. I think Clowney's probably there for a year because of the medical stuff with him. Could be traded. I think there's a chance D. Ford's traded because Spags is new there and he's looking for something a little bit different. And so It's weird, but like because of this, like I look at the free agent market now, and it's like this is sort of the way it used to be, like where guys didn't make it to free agency, and it hadn't been that way the last couple of years. But we're looking at a pretty depleted free agent market out there now.
The good part is, if you need a defensive lineman, you can get one in the draft.
Yeah,
an exceptionally deep class. So right. If teams are assessing their offseason needs, you figure, well, you have 2 shots to fill your offseason needs. One's free agency, one's the draft, and this is the deepest defensive line class we may have ever seen.
And it's not a bad thing for these guys to get tagged either. If you look at the numbers, right? Like, I mean, Lawrence is going to wind up making, I think, a little over 37 over 2, right? Clark gets 17 for 1. Grady Jarrett gets over 15 for 1. Clowney and D. Ford 17 for 1. And maybe deals if they get traded. It's just like for all of these guys, I don't think it's – I don't know. I've seen people say like the franchise tag is like a horrible thing for players. I think it was. I think the numbers have sort of matured to the point where maybe it isn't so much anymore. And I think Kirk Cousins and Tremaine Johnson sort of gave examples of why it can be a good thing if it's approached and it's used the right way.
And you stay healthy. I mean, that's...
It depends on your position,
yeah, I mean,
too.
That's like the major factor here. But yeah, I mean, with Lawrence especially, I mean, you know, you're taking that, what, 40% raise,
yeah.
Correct? Yeah, I mean, you know...
Or 20%.
Or 20%, yeah. And, you know, but I think that teams are more... I'm surprised they're not as hesitant to use it, just because Kirk Cousins, I feel like, set that precedent where, okay, I know that you're thinking about tagging me again, and so this is the salary, this is the floor of the next salary. You know,
right.
that was really the first time that that became a predominant talking point around the franchise tag. Then we heard that again with DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, during this free agency. And so I think it's an interesting thing where, like, teams still seem very eager to use it, maybe because the cap is rising, you know, and they have more money. But at the same time, it's like, man, $24 million for a defensive end is a lot of money.
And you wonder, like, how much it's like what happened with Mac is going to I mean, like, it has to, right? Because there's now a gap between, like, it's like, okay, like, is Frank Clark worth 18 or 19 million a year, right? Like, he's not Mac. And Mac's making 20, but Mac's making 23 and a half. So, like, if you're Frank Clark, you probably want to get, like, maybe not in the neighborhood, but in the city, you know, that Mac's in, right? Like, Clowney's got the injury issue, but, like, he was the first overall pick in the draft, and he went 3 picks higher than Mac, so maybe he wants to get closer to there. It's going to be really interesting to see. And look, maybe the Mac contract is one reason, the Mac and Donald contracts are reasons why it was hard for these teams to get the deals done in the first place, which is why they need the
certainly
placeholders.
In the case of Grady Jarrett, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the market for interior pass rushing has matured even to the point where you can't afford a guy like that.
Well, look at, like, so Donald's, I think, at 22.5 mm-hmm. per, right? And the tag for D tackles is like just over 15. It's a $7 million gap. Like, that's a gigantic gap. All right, Jenny, news item number 2.
Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray participated in medicals and interviews at the combine, but did not run or throw. He said he will at his pro day, which is set for March 13th in Norman, Oklahoma. Very heavily anticipated pro day, obviously, because, you know, teams didn't get, you know, a live look at him at the combine. You know, it's remarkable to me that no one would be surprised, that we're at the point that no one would be surprised if Murray goes 1 to the Cardinals. Not saying that it will definitely happen, but even getting to that point where no one is surprised is something. I mean, this is a guy who not very long ago was, you know, going to go pro in another sport.
Yep.
So one full season as a starter, coming from the air raid systems that used to have been poo-pooed by the NFL, and now basically people are like, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he goes number one.
I think it's the Baker situation on steroids, because the rise happened, but it happened a lot faster. Like, Baker was short, this guy's shorter. Baker was a little Baker was smaller, this guy's even smaller. Like, it's the Baker situation on steroids, which I think kind of makes you wonder, are we all overcorrecting a little bit? Are teams overcorrecting a little bit? You know, like, where it's like, oh, well, you know, now we really got to, like, it's just because there's got to be a point, right? Like, there's got to be a point where it just, it's too much, you go too far. And that's what's so interesting about this one is that, like, he really is, like, we haven't seen a long-term starting quarterback at his size in, you know, the post-merger era. There's never been one like him. And, you know, like, it's, you know, for the Doug Fluties of the world, it's like, well, I never succeeded because I never got my shot. Well, now this guy's going to get a shot.
I do think that I think you make a good point with the overcorrection theory, but I think that this is an outlier in that you have a new head coach coming from completely outside of the NFL who's watched this kid play since high school. Like,
right.
I think that, you know, I think if Cliff Kingsbury didn't have a relationship with Kyler Murray, I don't know if we're talking about this.
Right.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I was just blown away that. We came into the combine thinking, okay, this might happen, and left the combine thinking, holy crap, like, this
is
still
going
might
to happen.
Yeah, really? You know, and you know, I think you can you can filter that out from both sides, because if you still just if you mute one ear and you just talk to people on the scouting side of it, there is that prevailing opinion that, like, this scares the crap out of me. I don't know if I would do this, you know, and not necessarily Cardinals people, but, you know, other people who are studying these players. But yeah, I mean, this is this could happen. I mean, I don't think.
I think, you know what? What's more than that? I think if you're the Cardinals, you took a big swing on Cliff Kingsbury, right? Like, that's a monster swing to go and hire a guy who got fired at Texas Tech, right? To go and hire a guy, you know, out of the Big 12 that way, you have to be all in. Like, that's the way I look at it. So if and I think, like, I think Cliff really likes Kyler. Like, beyond just what he said, like, from what I've heard, I talked to Lincoln Riley about this, who played with Cliff at Texas Tech. I think he really likes Kyler as a player and really thinks Kyler can succeed in the NFL. If you're Steve Keim and Mike Bidwell, and Cliff Kingsbury comes to you and says, that kid there, that kid on that Oklahoma tape, that kid is the perfect guy for my offense, I think you have to listen to him. Like, I think you have to listen to him, because you've already taken this huge risk to hire the guy in the first place. I mean, you might as well be all in.
Yeah. I thought Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network kind of put it well. He's like, if it were me, I would just stand pat with Rosen and take Bosa one. He goes, but you're already going down this unconventional route. Yeah. You've brought in Kingsbury, so you might as well kind of go all in on the unconventional route. And I think that does make a lot of sense. You can see why they would reason that way. You know, opinions on Murray seem to be all across the map. You know, you talk to scouts who are like, this is the best player I saw all year, you know, saying similar things to what you heard about Baker. Like, if he was 6 feet, it'd be a no-brainer. You also heard people saying, I would not make him my franchise guy. Like you said, Connor, it scares the heck out of me. I think the closest thing that I found that most people agreed on is that he's boom or bust, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe many quarterbacks are to a degree boom or bust, but I think there's the idea that his ceiling is really high, but the floor is really low. And, right. You know, when you try to play it safer with quarterbacks, you kind of want the floor a little higher, well, right?
What's so unique about it, though, Jenny, like what I think's, all right, so like you start with the baseline, which is like if you draft a quarterback that high, you are tying your job security to the guy, right? Like if you draft a quarterback in the top 10, you're basically saying, like, my livelihood is now tied to this kid, right?
And it would be especially in this case, because right. You would be reversing course from last
right.
year.
I do think that the drafting Baker first overall gives you a little bit of cover, right? Because that had never been done before. That was a big swing by John Dorsey. There were other guys who had prototype size who looked like NFL quarterbacks that were available. And Dorsey said, you know what? I'm going to just trust my gut. I'm going with Baker Mayfield, even though it's never been done before. And so I think that in the same way that like hiring Sean McVay and succeeding with Sean McVay, like gave a lot of these other teams cover to hire young coaches, right? Like young quarterback oriented coaches. I think the Browns having some early success with Baker Mayfield has probably given the team some cover and like taken a little bit of the heat off as far as taking a risk on a guy that early of that size at that position.
Here's my counter to that, right, is that Cliff Kingsbury is a college coach and he's also kind of on the tail end of that McVay tree, which I think could get untrendy very quickly. And this is Sean McVay notwithstanding, if Zach Taylor has a bad season in Cincinnati or, you know, any of these guys have a bad season. And we've seen this time and time again, NFL owners get embarrassed very quickly. You know yeah. what I mean? And they make decisions like that. And so that's why I would support the Kyler Murray decision if that's what Cliff Kingsbury does, because he doesn't have 5 years. He has two. You know, he has one, maybe. You know, this is a Chip Kelly situation. You know, I think that people are looking at it through that lens where it's an outsider.
That's fair.
You know, this isn't your typical, NFL hire, you know, where you might be
like, this
more
is probably going to go spectacularly one way or the other.
Yeah. And I think that everybody thought that going in, but it's still crazy to me to think that we left either witnessing the worst attempt at subterfuge.
It's spelled weird, so I'm not sure. Like,
super fudge.
I think that's right.
It's spelled like super fudge.
Yeah,
like
if you look at it fast, it looks like super fudge. It does.
No,
so
it
he's
doesn't.
Right. Yeah, he does. Because the T kind of looks like an F.
The worst take
like
I've heard on this podcast.
No, I may just love fudge.
I'm doubling down on his bad take. That T looks like an F.
I would say that, you know, we have to remember that Steve Keim's running the draft room, and this is where it's awkward, right? Because he's on, you know, he kept his job and they bring in a new head coach and Keim's on a very different timeline. So like, how does he feel about it? You know, and
do you think Keim was like, oh crap, when Kyler put that, like tweeted out, like, I'm going to football.
I mean, it would be interesting to know his reaction.
Like, he might've been like, crap, this just got way more complicated on me.
And and the other thing I would say is, we know when you hire a guy that has a reputation for like working with quarterbacks, like you sort of want to think like, I understand bringing in his own guy, but don't you want to think like you have a first rounder? Like, you know, don't you want to think that this guy could work? Now, obviously there's clearly stuff going on last season beyond just Rosen not having talent around him, because if there wasn't and if teams weren't hearing things, the trade market for him would be a lot higher than a second or a third, which is what it seems to be right now.
And I want to talk about that in a second. Like, I've been the captain of the Cliff Kingsbury, like Kyler Murray's a good fit for Cliff Kingsbury bus, right? Or ship. I think you look at Kingsbury, like the guys he's worked with, though, it seems like he could work with different kinds of guys because he had Davis Webb, he had Johnny Manziel, he had Baker Mayfield, he had Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, so he had four NFL quarterbacks he worked with at the collegiate level, and they're all a little different. Like, Baker's a smaller kind of move-around guy. Kyler's obviously a guy who's capable of breaking off – or, I'm sorry, Johnny was a guy, kind of guy who was like capable of breaking off the long one. Patrick Mahomes is sort of like the bigger, stronger, like guy who can excel on broken plays. And then Davis Webb was sort of the pocket passer. So you had different types of quarterbacks. So he's shown he's capable of winning with different types of quarterbacks. I do want to get to what you talked about, Jenny, because I think that part of it's fascinating too. I think opportunity is opening up now. If you're a team like the Steelers, like the Packers, like the Chargers, like the Patriots.
The Giants.
The Giants. I would say the Giants, but my point here is going to be those teams have great quarterbacks. And because, like, the reason this doesn't apply to the Giants as much is because, like, I think if the other teams haven't drafted high, like, basically, like, those teams never draft high enough to get one, right? So I feel like those teams have to think, like, a little creatively, like, how are we going to find the successor? And to me, this is an opening to do something creatively. Like, we can find the successor without having to make some massive move up the draft board some year to go and get one, right? So I think for those teams, the Giants, I put the Giants in that category, too, as, like, a team that could use a successor. But the Giants sort of have multiple options. You know what I mean? Like, the Giants could sit there and maybe take Dwayne Haskins and do it the conventional way. Whereas I think, like, the Packers, the Steelers, the Patriots, the Chargers, I mean – while those teams have their current quarterbacks in place, probably won't ever be bad enough to draft one high.
And totally, that's probably why the price tags that we're hearing maybe a little. That's one reason why they may be a little bit lower.
I feel like they should be able to get a low one for him. Like, I feel like I think the Chargers are great. Like, if I'm the Chargers, I really, really think about that. Where's their pick? 28, something like that. 20, like somewhere. Their pick's pretty low. Like, if I'm the Chargers, I like seriously look at that.
I just don't understand.
Or the Patriots, for that matter.
I don't understand how you came out of this weekend, like, just uncomfortably still towing this dividing line. Like, either you want people to think we're taking this guy, and if you want him, you got to come up to one and get him,
right?
Or market's open, come get Josh Rosen. And right. Instead, it's like this uncomfortable, like, well, he's our cornerback for now. And, like, if your only defense is, well, last year everyone thought that Sam Darnold was going number one, right. You know, go pound sand. I mean, we know what's going on here.
You know what's great about it, too, is that, like, the minute they put him out on the market, they're telling everybody what they're doing.
Right.
The minute that's part of this dance, too, right? Like, it's like.
But how could you be that bad at it? You know what I mean? They were bad at it for the world to see.
Yeah.
If you're parsing your press conference with all this legalese, like, he's our quarterback for now. Right. How do you think that that's going to play? I mean, how is this not rehearsed?
I wonder,
at all?
Remotely
before you stepped up.
Do you think
there?
They thought they were being slick, like that they could slide the for now in and nobody would notice before right. Everybody noticed?
This is a great point, right? That's because you know the questions you're getting, and so it's fair to ask, what is their strategy, or did they have a strategy?
It seems like there was no strategy. Like, what would be if you had time to prep for one question that combined? What question would you have prepped for?
Are you taking Kyler Murray number one overall?
So, okay, let's come up with a bulletproof answer here. Let's use the four-hour flight from Phoenix to come up with something that's going to keep everybody happy. My God, how is that the answer?
I don't know how that's
good
the answer.
Good Lord.
Okay.
I thought the top question might have been, you know, what's your favorite restaurant in Indianapolis?
Are you guys going to re-sign Marcus Golden?
Yeah.
All right, new segment, topic number three. Seven receivers ran in the 4.3s in the 40-yard dash, the same number as in 2016, 17, and 18 combined. Mississippi State's Montez Sweat broke the record for defensive linemen with a 4.41, and three linebackers, including likely first-rounders Devin White and Devin Bush, ran in the 4.4s at the scouting combine. And the reason I put this one in here, guys, I want to ask you, like, do you think that that's worth anything? Because there have been years when you've heard, like, the draft class, like, 2014, 2016, like, those were seen as draft classes that were, like, outstanding, right? Like, and this class hasn't been seen that way, but now it looks like we've got freak after freak after freak. And these numbers typically, I think they get incrementally better over the years, but this seemed like an explosion. And so I'm wondering if either of you guys, while we were in Indianapolis, like, either came up with something for some sort of reason for it, or if you think that there's any reason to put stock in it.
Well, I thought it was interesting because going in, you know, the talk was that the skill position class wasn't that good. But then seeing a lot of the receivers like run really well and some of them perform well in the you know, throwing drills and obviously making the catches, I feel like there's a lot of options at receiver. I mean, it might not be all top of the first round guys. I mean, obviously that top of the first round seems like it's going to be defensive linemen and Kyler Murray. But, you know, it seems like if you need a receiver, you can get one. Like there seems to be a lot of guys there. You know, all the Ohio State guys ran well. And, you know, you've got Metcalf that's making everyone buzz and N'Keal Harry. And I just feel like there were a lot of guys that I felt like, wow, there's more value at this position than I thought going in.
Maybe a little bit of jostling too, because what are the two, really the perimeter players on offense and defense are the real, like if you want to say risers and fallers at the combine, those are the positions where you can kind of make or lose money at the combine. Yep. And a lot of those guys, you know, performed exceptionally well. I mean, I think that while it's going to be a defensive heavy draft, I think that middle area, you could see a lot of these guys coming off the board. And defensive back is, you know, perennially the most drafted position anyway.
Does it matter to you that they ran that fast?
No, I mean,
it's cool to see, like, right? Like, it's cool to see a record go down. Like, it's fun to watch, but, like, does it matter?
Like, the DK Metcalf thing was neat. It's just like, wow, that looks like an extremely athletic person, but we're not, like, we're not in my neighbor's backyard playing kill the man with the ball. We're playing...
I wouldn't want to play kill the man with the ball with DK Metcalf. No.
But also, just for the record, you know, I did a little research into this body fat
this
percentage.
Is good. Yeah.
Yes.
Did you?
It is definitely...
So it was 1.6. What was the number?
Or then he corrected it and said it was 1.9. But basically, that's below what is, like, necessary for your body to function. There's something called...
Is that true?
It's true. There's something called essential fat in the body that's in major organs that are required for normal physiological function. For men, that's generally around 3%. So the most logical explanation is that there was an error in the bod pod, which is the air displacement technology that they use to measure.
Research.
Yeah, in my research? No. See, I think the bod pod itself advertises an error of like 1 to like 2.7 percentage points, and I think people would tell you that it can actually be higher. He is clearly ridiculously athletic and probably has an extremely low body fat. I just don't think it's 1.9 because I don't think he would be alive.
I'm only disagreeing with your research because I don't want to disagree with DK Metcalf.
I'm sure that's the number he was given, and that's the number teams are given. I'm just saying.
So it had to be because they put you in like a tank, right, or something like that. Isn't that how they do it?
Well, they use the bod pads, which instead of water, it's air displacement.
Okay,
but they also do another scan at the hospital, which is like this dual x-ray technology. It's a little bit more accurate because the problem is with the air displacement, you're measuring fat versus non-fat, and it doesn't also measure bone, and bone density can vary a lot, especially for elite athletes. There's also higher margin of error at the extremes when you're measuring, so extremely obese and extremely lean. So I think it's just fair to say that he probably does have the lowest body fat percentage at the combine. It just might not be 1.9% because, you know, that would be hard to live with.
What a great, like, scouting criticism that could come from your research, though. It's like, well, you know, I don't like this guy because he's got pretty dense bones, or like his bones aren't dense enough. You know, like we've criticized players for everything else now.
Not criticizing Metcalf. He's just repeating the number he's given. I'm just saying I don't think you can live with that number.
So you heard it here first. DK Metcalf is actually physically impossible. He's actually physically impossible. I want to know what that guy eats, because I don't know. I sure wasn't that disappointed.
Alberta has a fitness goal now.
No.
I'm just going to measure myself in that specific bod pod because it seems to be player friendly.
When I first saw that picture, I literally thought like that he was the guy on the right. Like I was like, oh wow, he's huge, and then he's the guy on the left. Like, because I you look at it, it's like that can't be a receiver,
right?
And it was okay. Connor, news item number 4.
Steelers GM Kevin Colbert said at the combine that the team will not put a tag on Le'Veon Bell, setting the star tailback free after he played the 2017 season on the franchise tag and sat through the 2018 season. I don't know. I mean, after we mentioned some of the skill position players at the combine, I don't think that that necessarily helped his market. You know, I think there's probably one or two teams that are going to be willing to give him, a small portion of what he was set to make in Pittsburgh.
I think he's going to have a harder time than some people think.
I think it's
the position. It's just the position. If you want, blame it on Damian Williams. If you want, blame it on C.J. Anderson. I mean, teams that had star tailbacks that wound up finding other answers that were perfectly suitable. And that's not to say that those guys are Kareem Hunt or they are Todd, a healthy Todd Gurley, but it just, I think what it is at that position is like you've got the very elite, right? And then I think like the next tier at that position is probably closer to the elite than at any other position. There's like less of a drop off going from the elite to the second tier. And it's like I look back at the great running back class, what was that, 2017, right? And like if you're the Jaguars, I mean, maybe you regret taking Fournette now, but Fournette's not a bad player. Christian McCaffrey, the Panthers probably don't regret taking him eighth overall. But in that same draft, Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt were in the third round. And so it's not so much that like Christian McCaffrey's not a great player. He's a great player, right? But would you have rather have taken someone else there? And I have to pull up who was available. But wouldn't you rather have taken someone else there and then gotten Kamara in the second or third round? I mean, you would, right? Like, and that's the whole problem with the position is that your money's probably better spent somewhere else if you can find a pretty suitable answer pretty easily at running back.
And I think, you know, Gurley slowing down toward the end of the season, the injury questions, you know, obviously there's a report it was arthritis. I think that doesn't help the value of an older back like Bell, right? Because you see Gurley get this big contract and yeah, he totally, like he was a huge part of getting them to the Super Bowl. But then, you know, down the stretch, because of the workload, because of his past injury history, which is obviously specific to him. Everyone has a different injury history. But I think that also takes away a little bit from the idea of like giving up back all this money.
He's got, and Bell's got mileage. I mean, totally. He's got mileage. He's got suspension history. I mean, if I'm another team, like I'd almost rather just have like Tevin Coleman. You know what I mean? Like if I really needed one, like just get a low mileage guy who has potential, who could be pretty good, but you maybe don't have to commit. You don't have to back up the Brinks truck for. It's just like even if you like are like I need a running back I can plug in right now, and I know I'm going to be able to plug in right now. Going and getting somebody like Tevin Coleman who wants half of what Bell, who's going to get potentially half of what Bell
still catch the ball.
Yeah, you can still catch the ball. You can do a lot with him, and so I just think. I don't know. It only takes one. But I'd be surprised if he's able to match what the Steelers offered him.
Yeah. This free agency is kind of just turning into like a little bit of a wet fart, you know?
A little bit
of
a womp womp. Yeah. I know. I kept hearing that at the combine, and you never quite know if it's agents being like, oh, man, teams are being cheap and don't want to pay. But you did hear a little bit of that at the combine.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard a lot of like, well, no one wants to commit to like the no one's talking real numbers right
Correct. Now.
And,
yeah.
I mean, you almost wonder if like, you know, there's always that land rush of deals, but you almost wonder if like there might be some like staring contests. Like maybe there's a guy or two at the top of the market who during that tampering period, what he was thinking isn't out there, and maybe he doesn't sign, right? Like maybe he likes, and I'm not saying it's going to turn into Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, but like if what you want isn't out there, does that guy sit out there and risk like losing the money because he's trying to say like, well, you know, someone's going to pay me eventually.
I could either see Le'Veon Bell signing right when it opens and saying like new team, you know, and all that stuff, or like us wondering like in early August, like where the hell is this guy gonna play next year?
So that would be a Bryce Harper situation.
I think it's one extreme or the other, because I don't think a market develops in the interim, right? Because you have the beginning of free agency where teams are like, where are we gonna get a back? Maybe we're not gonna get a back, we should pay him. But then you have the draft. And then, you know, at that point you're waiting for injuries, you're waiting for, you know, a GM to get just desperate enough to do it, and that takes time.
Right. I mean, I think part of the problem with that, like the difference between football and basketball and baseball is like football and basketball you got salary cap. Baseball, you don't. And so, like, I think there's probably less risk in baseball than any other sport, because by the time you get close to the season, most of the teams have used, like, most of the salary cap space is used up. So, anyway, Jenny, news item number 5.
Jason Witten is returning to football, agreeing to a 1-year deal last week to leave the Monday Night Football booth and fill a hole on the Cowboys roster. I would say, like, this news that the Cowboys Twitter account itself broke it. I feel like it was
Which
one
is
of
like
those.
They did a really good job of keeping it quiet.
Totally,
too.
It was one of those situations where you like did a double take.
The guy worked at ESPN, and they were able to keep it quiet.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like I heard someone say, and I thought they were kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I was. I'll be honest. I was surprised by it. I didn't see it coming. There's a cynical part. Now, I was told this wasn't the case, but there's still a cynical part of me that's like, did ESPN just quietly tell him, we're going to be making some changes, and maybe Jerry gave him a parachute? I don't know. I mean, like, that's just like it just popped into my head that, like, is that possible that that happened?
It is. And that's kind of an interesting thought. I think that it's just Jerry sort of like fetishizing the golden years of like this modern Cowboys team. Yeah. And like, I mean, if you look at it, everything is set up for this year. I mean,
right.
If you're paying Jason Witten, you know, that's the other thing. The only reason that I don't think that Jerry Jones did that is because they paid him $5 million, you know, up to $5 million, right. And they were not bidding against anybody, you know? But this is a totally insane Cowboys season to me because all the bills are due after this year.
Right.
And some of them are due this year.
Well, a lot of, like, they've got a handful of guys on, like, big name,
like,
guys.
All of the bills are due.
Yeah.
And the first thing that you do is go out and sign a 38-year-old tight end,
right?
Who no one was bidding against.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I don't think they're going to be in the Earl Thomas market, but it's just because they got too many guys to take care of. They've got, unless Thomas wants to take a huge discount to play in Texas. I mean, if you look at the guys, and we'll run down the list. Zeke Elliott isn't going into a contract
Byron
year. Byron Jones is going into a contract year. Dak Prescott's going into a contract year. Amari Cooper's going into a contract year. Jalen Smith's going into a contract year. Now Zeke's got the option for 2020. I believe Jalen Smith might technically be an RFA next year. So there are some things they can work with, but it's still a lot of business to do.
Yeah, this to me just seems. I mean, if they don't win this year, I mean, this is the year. This is it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you can build a roster.
I think the Dak situation is really interesting. Because does Dak take less to stay? Like, if you're Dak, like, because they could take advantage of the fact that he just, because he was a fourth-round pick, he hasn't made money. And maybe if you just put, like, a pretty good contract in front of him, not a great one, but maybe a pretty good contract in front of him, like, that'd be pretty hard to turn down. Like, if they offer Dak, 27 a year, right? Which is wow, your eyes just got really big.
Yeah.
But that's like, that'd be a B-level quarterback contract right now. Like, that's a little more than Derek Carr makes. Like, that's not crazy. So say they offer him 26, 27 million, which is a below market deal. If you're Dak, do you have to do that? Probably, right?
It's an interesting question. It's funny you say that this is like the year where they have to win. Does anyone think that they could actually win this year? I mean,
no. The other thing. Yeah.
You know, like,
you know what else we talk about? The coach is in a contract year.
Right. Well, that's interesting too.
Yeah. I mean, we could be looking at a pretty different team a year from now.
Maybe Witt will be coaching.
Maybe that's the plan.
That was part of the initial wave of reports.
Yeah, it came
right
out there. Came out there. Yep. I mean, maybe he'll be Kellen Moore's offensive coordinator.
Or Lincoln Riley.
I'm
just really ending this with some wild
conspiracy
theories.
Okay, so here's a good way to end it.
I will say this. I would not rule out. I just file this one away. Don't rule out Sean Payton eventually landing there. Don't rule that out. Like I'm not saying Sean wants to leave. I will say this. I think there are two coaches that the Cowboys would move on from Jason Garrett for. Even if Garrett like had a pretty good year, if he had a great year, that's off the table. But if he had a pretty good year, the two coaches that they, and maybe they would have moved on from Garrett this year for these two. One is Sean Payton, the other one's Lincoln Riley.
Here's a more fun way to end the show.
There you go.
Who do you want to replace? Who do you want to hear on Monday Night Football this year? Because it's open, the gig is up for grabs. Who do you guys want? You can pick anybody in the whole world. Who do you want?
I mean, I think Riddick makes sense. I mean, I'm not the only person that says it, but I mean, my story on Riddick is like, I did a story on Belichick and Saban, and I had this section on like pattern matching, which they essentially developed in Cleveland and has become a part of all defensive playbooks. And I just didn't really, I wanted to make sure I had it right. And because Lewis Riddick explained it to me, I was able to like transfer like a pretty complicated defensive concept, called him back, read him like the sentences that I was writing to make sure was accurate. And like, I mean, that to me is someone who can explain football and convey it to a large audience. And that's why I think he'd be great. I also don't think he'd be afraid to say what he thinks in that role. And I think we really need that.
Can I give you a three-man booth?
Okay, go ahead.
Three-man booth. And I like these guys, so I'm a little biased here, but I've seen their chemistry. I think chemistry is so important in television. Give me a three-man booth. You know, keep Tessitore, put whoever you want play-by-play. Nate Burleson and Mike Robinson.
Mike Robb, fellow Penn Stater, we are.
I think that those two, like I've seen those two together. I know the way that they are together. I think that though, I just think that that could be really like, and it would be a huge dice roll, right? Because normally you put normally you're going to put like a guy who is a huge name, big player. Like maybe you write a blank check to Peyton Manning, whatever.
No.
I just think chemistry is really important. I know both those guys work their asses off. So three-man booth with Mike Robb and with Nate Burleson.
I go back to
and see, I'm not all against Penn State.
I like it.
I go back to 2000. So I do Tess. I do Lewis Riddick because I think he's fantastic too. And then like mix it up like Paul Rudd, you know?
So this is like a Dennis Way Miller out of situation?
Yeah, but like one that would work because with the third person, you don't need like there's already enough analysis between the two people. You need someone that's just going to be from left field like once every 5 minutes.
You
just
need
saying
a Connor
something.
Orr on the broadcast.
Yeah, kind of like Connor
Orr. Spice it up
right.
A little now
just,
and then.
Just a little bit.
Paul
yeah.
Rudd.
Yeah.
If Paul there Rudd. Was a celebrity... God, who would you?
Eric Stonestreet is another big football fan.
Yeah, Eric Stonestreet.
Both big Chiefs fans.
Eric Stonestreet.
Melissa Etheridge.
Ooh.
Chiefs fan.
Like it.
She's trying to think of
she wrote a song about Alex Smith.
See, I would rather, the networks would never go for this, but I would rather put like a wild card in there, like some guy who you never know what he's going to say. Like throw like Russell Crowe in there or something like that. Like have somebody in there where you just have no
idea. Who's never seen football. Like yeah,
you just don't know what he's going to say next, right? Like now they would never become.
Rebel Wilson. That would be. I don't know if she likes football or not, but that would be a good one. Is that her last name? Wilson?
Yeah,
Rebel
yeah.
Wilson. Yeah.
Will Ferrell was pretty good in the booth.
Kristen Wiig would be great
on the
Tina Fey
on the Saturday.
Oh, Tina Fey.
On the
yeah.
Saturday Night Live skits. Like Will Ferrell was pretty good in the Monday Night booth.
We're just throwing a lot out here. Yeah. I like it.
All right, thanks, guys. All right, we'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every week I put the call for questions out on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like. That means I hit that little heart there on Twitter, and you get an answer here. We're going to start with Jack Dicker. This is question number one, at the Jack Dicker. Are the Cardinals serious about drafting Murray at number one, or are they just enhancing the value of that pick to trade? And if yes, who are the likely trade partners for this? Thanks. Jack, I do not think they trade the number one overall pick because I do not think that there is a team that would come all the way up to draft either Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins. And I think to get a trade at number one, you need to have a quarterback up there. And so I think it's either Murray or Bosa would be my opinion right now at number one. And I do think that they are very, very serious about drafting Kyler Murray. Like I said with Jenny and Connor earlier on, this is a quarterback that fits Cliff Kingsbury's ideal in certain ways. And you're all in on Kingsbury. If you're all in on Kingsbury, then you need to listen to what he has to say. And my guess is he'll have some pretty positive things to say to both Steve Keim and Mike Bidwell about Kyler Murray. And I think there's a good chance that he winds up being an Arizona Cardinal. I do not think that they've made that decision yet. Question number two from Michael Mannix. That's at Theo Mannix. Does Josh Gordon play in the NFL in 2019? What is the reinstatement process, and where could he land? He is eligible to apply for reinstatement in May. The NFL controls the process from there. They could reinstate him in August. They could reinstate him in October. They could reinstate him conditionally. There's a lot of moving parts there as far as how Josh Gordon would get back into the NFL. If he does, there are some clues that the Patriots would have him back. He's hung around the area. On Instagram, I believe it was on Monday, he was Instagram storying or whatever you call that from the TB12 complex at Patriot Place. He was working out there, which means he's maintaining a relationship with the quarterback and using some of his workout methods. And so I think that there's a decent chance Josh Gordon plays in the NFL in 2019. And if he does play in the NFL in 2019, I do think he'll be back with the New England Patriots. Question number three from Andres Para. That's at Fkin. I'm not going to pronounce that fully because you guys know what that says. _ Para. Should the Broncos give Elway another chance if he drafts another bust at quarterback? I think this is part of the problem with hiring a legend into that position. They're very difficult to fire. That said, he does get some mileage off of winning a championship. This year he's going to be 4 years removed from that championship season. If you want to look back at what happened with Tom Coughlin got, I believe, 4 years after his championship season before he was shown the door. Jerry Reese got 6 seasons after that championship season before he was shown the door. So these guys generally do get leeway. So I think whoever Elway drafts next at that position will be the last player that he drafts at that position for the Broncos. They've got Joe Flacco as a placeholder now. Whether they draft that quarterback this year, next year, the year after that, either that guy will be wildly successful and carry John Elway into retirement, or that player will be the one that gets Elway shown the door. Question number four, this is from Rico the Viking. That's at Air Force 1990 underscore 20. Who do you see as the most likely taking the AFC East crown once Brady retires, and when do you see that happening? Okay, I'll tell you what I like about each of these teams. All right. I like how the Dolphins right now are aligned. Okay. If you want to look at Brian Flores, his coaching staff, most of them have ties either to New England or to him personally. Both his coordinators have background in New England. That would be Chad O'Shea on offense and Pat Graham on defense. Both those guys coached in New England for an extended period of time. They know what he wants. Danny Crossman's a special teams coach. He learned under Scotty O'Brien, who's another New England guy. So I like the alignment there. Obviously, there's a relationship between Brian Flores and Chris Greer. That's just getting off the ground. What I like in Buffalo is that they have a long-term plan and that they've committed to that long-term plan. And even though they made the playoffs in 2017, they didn't overreact. They didn't go all in 2018. They went through the process they'd planned to go through the year before. They went through a teardown year. I like what Sean McDermott's done there early on. The Jets, I like their quarterback. I think Sam Darnold's going to be a really good player. And so you look at what the three teams have going for them. Alignment, plan, quarterback. What do you want most? I think most teams would want a quarterback most. So as crazy as it might sound, I think the Jets actually probably have the best shot at challenging New England whenever the downturn comes. Question number five from Andrew Fisher. That's at Colts Fisher. Will NFL players ever have the type of leverage to move freely like NBA and MLB stars? I actually would kind of group NBA and NFL players together and put baseball players separate. Here's why. In the NBA and the NFL, you've got a salary cap. In the NBA and NFL, you've got constraints on the top of the market. They're just set up different ways. In the NBA, you've got max contracts. In the NFL, you've got franchise tags. Both those constrain the top of the market. Okay? Now, it's easier to move around in the NBA because the players have more leverage because there are fewer of them and because there's no mechanism that allows teams to keep a guy off the market. So I think baseball players are sort of in a separate category in that there's no constraint that's stopping the market from growing on individual players, and there's no salary cap. Do I think that NFL players will ever have the type of leverage to move freely like NBA players? No, because I don't think franchise tags are going away. The reason why, again, it has to do with the number of players. There are almost 2,000 players in the NFL in any given season. An incredibly small percentage of those players are affected by the franchise tag. So when they go to the bargaining table in 2 years, franchise tags are going to be way down the list. They're going to be worried about post-career benefits. They're going to be worried about the overall piece of the pie they get. They're going to be worried about how their off seasons are set up. They're going to be worried about a lot of different things. How the rookie salaries work now. There's going to be a lot of different things they're going to be worried about. Franchise tags are going to be way down the list because franchise tags affect such a small percentage of the players. Finally, question number six. This is from John Hunton. That's at JH underscore Hunton. With several young and veteran guys approaching contract extensions in the next few years, who's the odd man out in Dallas? I think Zeke Elliott's there long term. I think Dak Prescott's there long term. I think Amari Cooper's there long term. I think Leighton Vander Esch is there long term. I think DeMarcus Lawrence is probably there long term. So the two guys to watch, I think, that could be in the move over the next couple of years, their best corner, Byron Jones, and their best and their middle linebacker, Jalen Smith. Those are the two guys that I think could wind up being maybe the ones that get squeezed out as they decide who to pay. It's just based on their investment. They've invested, obviously, time and effort in developing the quarterback, Dak Prescott. They invested the fourth overall pick in Zeke Elliott. They invested a first-round pick in Amari Cooper, sending that to Oakland. And they've invested now two franchise tags into Marcus Lawrence. So to me, Jones and Smith would be the ones that would be likely to move on. They've got a ton of cap space after this year, though, so they do have some room to work with. Okay, I appreciate you guys coming out. As always, please give me all the feedback that you got. We want to make this your podcast. You know where you can get me: on Twitter at Albert Breer, on Facebook at Albert R. Breer, on Instagram at Albert underscore Breer. Hit me up on any of those. Give me your feedback. We want to hear from you. And as always, listen to all the MMQB NFL podcasts, both this one and the podcast that Gary and Andy do on Monday mornings. You can get both of us on One Feed on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.